Word up, homies and home girls. Oh, that doesn't work really, does it, Elliot? Particularly coming from me. Never mind. Anyway, welcome to the Rolling Ball, the Leicester Tigers fans podcast with me, Mike. And over there is Elliot with what looks like a mattress propped up against your wall. What's that?
I'm in the third bedroom and we are DIYing, so the bed has had to go.
The east wing.
Quite. So we are having to do some renovations to the third bedroom and decorating. So the bed is on the process of being sold. I'm now in the feeling your pain from Facebook Marketplace because it is a horror show. So bed's going, mattress will go with it. We just need someone to come and collect it. We offered it up for free and we've been messed around incredibly, even over a free bed and mattress. So
Is an absolute cesspit. I mean, like, just trying to sell sort of a pram or something like that on it. The amount of people that were coming in and say, kind of like, oh, yeah, can I do it via PayPal? And then sending, like, you know, even for a scammer, like, just a really poor attempt at a PayPal email. So, yes, this is a fake. Will you get a life? And you know that you're not going to get through to them or whatever like that. So, absolute cesspit. Horrible stuff. But yeah, I thought you had it up in the background as if you were kind of like, it was a bit of subliminal salesmanship to me. I'm all right though, thanks, mate.
No, I've watched Trainspotting clearly over the weekend and decided just to have a bare mattress on the wall, just in homage to Trainspotting.
Very good. Another defeat to talk about, another defeat to Gloucester. This one was, I would say, less expected than the Premiership Cup one, considering who we had returning, and lots to talk about on that. But Elliot, you were there. Aside from the defeat, what was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, we've been double Gloucestered. The cheese defeat. It's not great. I don't know. It's one of those. It's tough. We'll get into it when we go through the review. I much prefer talking about wins on these podcasts. It brings so much joy rather than defeats, but hey ho.
Yeah, I've got to admit, to quote Blackadder, I think that if I'd have dropped dead on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, my headstone would read, "Here lies Michael Cooper, and he's bloody annoyed," because that was sort of the pervasive feeling that went through my entire weekend, thanks to that last minute excellent, I must admit, with my neutral hat on, Stephen Varney try. But a lot to pick through about how we got into that situation anyway. And, I still think there are some things to be pleased about, you know, not an enormous amount, but obviously plenty more things to be annoyed about and even a few to be pretty worried about. So as always, we'll try and deal with stuff even-handedly and not kind of go down the route of saying it was a complete shit show, because in many ways it was a better performance than what pretty much every way, it's a better performance than what we put in the Premiership Cup, but still sadly not good enough. We're also going to talk about the next fixture, another Friday night game against Newcastle. They're still obviously bottom without a win, but they've got Steve Diamond in. Have you seen today, Elliot? He's been chirping off about Tigers.
Yeah, he can't help himself. Can't help himself.
We'll get into that later. I do think he has a point about potentially us blocking illegally on lineouts, because we flagged it before that we need to be a bit careful. But it also does mean he's shitting his pants about our rolling ball, hopefully. I don't know if Steve Diamond does shit his pants. Possibly. Who knows? I don't know his toilet habits. Let's do a very quick shout out to the Fantasy League, which I'd forgotten all about and therefore I've lost four places. But Matt Gilbert's 10 is still very much top of the leaderboard by about just under 100 points, with 2,422 points. Then we've got Duncan and Jay, which sounds like some sort of, I'd say, Ant and Dec duo, in second and third place, very, very close around the 2,320 point mark. So that's looking pretty close, but Matt Gilbert annoyingly seems to have a bit of a lead there, so we need to go and try and catch him off. But the one good thing I'm going to say before we get into the game is that at least we're not Saints or Harlequins.
Yes, Stevie. I would be lying if I said I wasn't. A smile on my face walking out of Welford Road when I looked down at my phone and saw the Saints score. I'm just going, could be worse.
Exactly. So maybe it provides some perspective, but perhaps it also means some teams have use this hiatus better than others?
Sometimes a situation gets so bad, you might sometimes have to take a bit of happiness from the misery of others. And from the depths of my own misery, I was happy that other teams were also miserable. So we can be miserable together.
Well, excellent. As you get older, I think you increasingly find happiness in others' misery. I think that's the main source of it. So something to look forward to as you progress through married life, Elliot. Anyway, thank you very much to everyone who's been listening over the last few weeks. Really appreciate all your feedback. Please make sure you get in touch with us on email, where our email address is therollingmall@outlook.com. Our Twitter handle is @rollingmallpod. And our Facebook group is obviously of the same name. And please remember to leave a rating and a review if you like what you're hearing.
Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting, and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGBALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGBALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase.
The news section is brought to you by Parish Brewery, who are offering you and your pub free beer. Now that I've got your attention, Parish Brewery award-winning ales are brewed in a 400-year-old converted stable block in Borough-on-the-Hill in rural East Leicestershire. It's here that they follow the traditional ways of brewing, using only the finest ingredients to brew their cask-conditioned beer. In addition to the many beer festival awards, the brewery is the proud recipient of a Guinness Book of World Records award in 1994 for having brewed the world's strongest beer at that time, Baz's Superbrew, and its offspring, Baz's Bonds Blower, is still going strong. Very strong, but absolutely delicious. Now back to the free beer. Parish are offering you the chance to win 4 perfect pints of their ale to enjoy at your local. All you have to do is tell them on Instagram or Facebook what your favourite Parish flavour is. If you're yet to try one, you can check out which one will tickle your taste buds by visiting parishbrewery.co.uk. Not only will you win, but so will your pub, as they'll be gifted a free pin, and that's 36 delicious pints to you and I. So get on your socials, tell Parish your favourite flavour, and get a chance for some free beer. It's that easy. Participating pubs only. All entrants must be 18 or over. Full terms and conditions apply. All right, let's do some beep, 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 beep news. And I think perhaps the first place to start, let's get it out of the way, the three signings that were announced that we'd already said were coming, which is obviously Izzy Parisi. We've got Nicky Smith. And, of course, what's the number 8? Okay, I still need to learn how to pronounce it.
Cornerbeetsa.
Not corned beef. That's correct. Excellent. Yeah, so the three signings, we've already discussed them, so we're not going to go into it again, but good to see them all announced, albeit in a slightly haphazard way that seemed to be perhaps driven more by sort of the media just announcing it.
Yeah, it was a funny one that obviously Charles went live on Monday, and very early on Tuesday morning, Tigers had to pronounce Beetsa. I wonder if that would annoyed Bondi, but hey-ho.
Yeah, but good to see them announced nice and early, so we can look forward to joining them. I think that all three of them will be excellent signings and in key positions as well, so that's all looking quite promising. Attack coach. Now, obviously, we've got no further details on the Alan Dickens situation. We'll just have to wait to hear from the club on that. Rumours of a different attack coach coming in. I think we've heard some, I don't know how substantiated they are at all, but we've heard some whispers.
Yeah, someone on the online forum sort of was hinting that they'd heard that Rod Seeb would be the one coming up. He's the current attack coach of Brumbies and was attack coach of Brumbies under McKellar. So could be wild, it could be true, it could be somewhere in between. However, it does, from my perspective, if it is true and Rod Sieber will be coming up to be the attack coach next season. And it sort of makes sense. You know, if you're getting McKellar in because you like what you did at the Brumbies, then it makes sense to get, you know, the Brumbies coaching team, as much of it together as possible. So it's also a good thing for McKellar to have his own people in and around him. So I have no idea if it's true or not, but we'll have to wait and see. No idea what's happened with Dickens. So we'll have to have a waiting game of what happens with there and what happens next. But it'd be interesting if that is the end destination of Sieb coming up. I sort of like it just because it means McKellar's got his own people around him.
Yeah, it also means the whole thing's been put to bed and we can move on, which would be nice, and actually look forward to building our attacking structure, which, you know, as we'll come to, still looks very, very, very clunky. I think that I would be pretty happy with that, mainly because, you know, McKellar, you can say what we want about, you know, the last two performances, but, you know, that there's mitigation that he's got for sort of like how this season is sort of winding down. And one of the main mitigating facts is, of course, he's had to do it all without an attack coach that he thought he was going to have throughout the entire season, which adds a massive amount to his workload and in an area where he's not a specialist. So actually, if you're going to give the guy a proper crack of the whip, you might as well give him, like you say, somebody who he feels very, very comfortable with, who he trusts. And then, you know, the nicest way, there's no excuses for it not to click next season. So certainly not writing off this season yet, as you'll hear in a bit. But I think that it does certainly make sense. So that's one potential incoming. Going the other way, another Aussie, Sam Carter. It's been announced that he has joined already due to an early release, the Western Force, to help them through their season. Shame to him, guy. I really like Sam Carter. I think he's, you know, obviously was never going to be first choice or even in a first choice match day squad, but offered a lot of sort of nous and stability in that area. And I thought he had some really, really good moments with us, in particular the away game at Stade Francais, where I thought he was very, in an understated way, he was absolutely superb. And I pointed out at the time, I think Vaines' third try was brought about by him looking as if he was picking and going, taking just one step forward and then doing sort of like a blind flick out to Vaines, and that had created the space for him. So a really intelligent player, by all accounts, an absolutely cracking bloke. And, you know, it's good for him to, I suppose, get home during the, probably what is going to be the last season or two of his career.
Yeah, it's one of those where, as a sign, it made sense for this season. Obviously with World Cup and a good experience depth option just to get us through. I think now is the right time for all parties really to for this move to happen. So I think it's one of those where you're sort of wishing, well, thanks for being with us, and yeah, best of luck back home in Australia. So it's as simple as that one.
I am going to miss McKellar saying Carter, though.
Won't we all? Won't we all?
Oh, right. Cheesed off. That's going to be the title of this podcast, I think. But unfortunately, we go down 25 points, 27 at home to Gloucester. And it was a young Gloucester side. We've got to take it on the chin. It wasn't, I don't think, their strongest side. And they hadn't won at Welford Road for 16 years. They came and they won largely with, I think, an excellent second quarter performance where they were, you know, they played us off the park. The first thing to do is you got to tip your cap. I think it was one of those games where the way the second half played out, whoever won it would deserve to win it. And because they won it, they deserved it. Excellent try if you're a neutral for the finish. Great finish by Varney, who I have to admit, I don't usually rate, but I thought he had a cracking game. And then I thought, you know, as irritating as it is when TNT sports commentators just fawn over certain players, and we knew they were going to do that to Zach Mercer. He was probably the best player on the park on the day. We couldn't handle him. And the difference between how they used Mercer and how we used Jasper was just night and day. And we'll come to that in a bit. But difficult one to take.
Yeah, frustrating evening. Especially how the rest of the weekend sort of panned out, really. Because if we'd have won, the result sort of would have gone in our favour for us to have had to come away with a good weekend, really. So it's a missed opportunity, to be fair. It's a frustrating game. Again, it's a game we should have won. Reminiscent, very reminiscent in lots of ways, actually, to the Harlequins at home game straight after the World Cup, where we had the internationals back in for a game just like that game. Didn't play at our best, but got ourselves into a winning position with 10 or under 10 minutes to go. And at home, you get yourself a few points ahead. You sort of should be winning the game at that point. You do should be able to go kick up on the extra gear, see it home, get bank your win, move on. Thanks for coming. So again, that didn't happen. So that's two games now where you do feel if we miss out at the end of the season, you'll point to those two games and be like just a couple percentage points better. That would have got us home, to be fair. So it's really frustrating. And it's one of those games where it's a weird one because I don't think we're at our best. You know, it wasn't a vintage Leicester performance. It's not our best performance of the season, but neither is it the horror show that it was, that's been portrayed by numerous corners. I watched the game back Sunday morning, cup of tea, home alone, just watching the game, almost watched completely fresh head, completely fresh, just to watch it. And it was just a game, as I said, that we should have won. It was just at crucial moments throughout the game. In fact, actually throughout the whole 80 minutes, bad decision making, a bad mistake, our own sort of errors let us down. And it is a costly thing for us. For me, sort of boils down to, and I know we'll get into it in a bit more detail, but there was three sort of key things for me. One, the defence. You know, you can't miss 35, 40 tackles in a game.
That's astonishing.
Irrespective of how they record the tackles missed, because sometimes a missed tackle isn't quite a missed tackle. Yeah, but
if you fly up in a blitz and, you know, you get an arm on someone and force them back inside, it might go down as a missed tackle for you, but you've done your job, if you know what I mean. So I do think that. But there were a lot of bad one-on-one misses.
Yeah, so it was quite striking when we watched the game back, how many, over the course of the 80 minutes, tackles we just fall off. You know, basic tackles we either don't make or fall off. It is quite striking. So that's obviously a major concern, because I think really all four, all the Gloucester tries came from missed tackles, you know, from not really system errors either. It's a straight up tackle. So that's frustrating. There's a missed chance 60 minutes, you know, we're on battering their line, maybe one to carry too many from the forwards. We could have shipped it out wide to the backs and got ourselves over, but Ackerman gets himself in quick. That to me is a real crucial sort of moment, because at that point, if we had scored there, you're under the post, you'd have backed the conversion, and it would have been 22 points scored in 21 minutes. You know, you're going at a point a minute, Gloucester on the ropes, the crowd is up, you've got momentum, you'd have scored three tries in the first 20 minutes of the second half. Gloucester would have been on the ropes. You probably, again, you'd back at 25-20 with 20 to go. And in that scenario, again, you'd back yourself to kick on and win the game. And the third one is and you sort of mentioned it earlier on as well, is just the energy levels of us. We were not at the levels you'd expect from a Tigers team. And that to me is the biggest question of McKellar, of why that is. Now, I obviously don't know the answer to that, because I'm not in and around the changing room. I'm not around the dressing room. I've not been in camp for all of last week, so I don't know what that is. Is it flu? Because obviously Pollard went down. Is there a bit of illness in camp? Or is it the straight up, we weren't at a level? And that, I can't answer that, and only McKellar and the players can. But, you know, it's, for me, those three key areas of the game is what the game decided on. If even one of them had been a bit better, I think we win the game. So, yeah, really frustrating.
I'd throw a fourth one in there, which I thought was our inability to slow them and turn them over at the breakdown, which is really surprising considering we had Tommy Turnover back in and he just had, you know, a record-breaking set of appearances in the Six Nations. You got Montoya, we know how good he is over the ball. Jasper, that's a big part of his game. Hanro gets in on it. Kata, we know he's very strong over the ball as well because he's basically a nugget. And it's, you know, that was quite a sports. Let's just have a quick chat about the conditioning, because, you know, I agree, and, you know, Healy picked it up on the comms, one of his less controversial pickups of the weekend. And at first, my instinctive reaction was like, not that bad. But then there were a couple of times when it really was noticeable, that sort of, and I know it's something McKellar won't really tolerate, you know, we didn't look as thused as Gloucester did. I think it was, ironically, just before our second try, Kata makes that break through the ruck and he passes out to Lenny. And Lenny gets caught up. And I was thinking to myself, Christ, where's the support? You know, like they have, I mean, Kata ran straight, but Lenny sort of bought time by doing some weaving and everything like that. Where's the support? And they showed the replay of it coming back, and I can see two blokes busting a gut. I can see Hanro and I can see Chez. And Chez, as we'll come to later, was, you know, he was completely shagged by the end because he's just played five test matches for England over the last few weeks. But he was busting a gut. And I thought, actually, Chez, I thought had a game where you could see he was putting everything in. He was one of the guys I thought was putting in max effort. And that was an example. But I was looking around, you know, I could see Jasper, who is usually just a Duracell bunny, you know, was looking weary and sort of, you know, plodding up and everything like that. So I was like, you know, this is it. You've got a break. You should all feel energized and like surge forward. Right, put the hammer down now. That's it. And there just wasn't that urgency. And that was quite concerning. I'm not just picking on Jasper there. God knows, I'd be mad to do that because he'd murder me. But like, you know, that is across the team. And, you know, McKellar acknowledged it himself. It was just really unlike us. And I suppose when we come down to conditioning, the uncomfortable alternative, and I don't think this is the case, we've got a really experienced, really good S&C team. And I'm sure that they have thought through that hiatus and obviously with the games and the Premiership Cup through to make sure we're in peak condition for the end of this season. I don't want to think that it is anything to do with that. The alternative, which obviously still isn't great because we lost the game, but it's a bit easier to kind of accept as just being an unfortunate thing, is illness. Now, whether that's flu, I heard on the grapevine, I don't know if this is true, that Hazy was quite sick at some point over the last week or so. If something like that sweeps through the team, even if it just kind of like isn't enough to stop you from playing, but it's enough to stop you from being at 100%, that can have cumulatively a massive impact. And I think, I think we'll see really against Newcastle in the coming weeks if it is that. But, you know, either way, we've got to get over it and get up to speed fast.
You can almost see the issues off the back of it because it feeds into so many different things which we've spoken about. Because the kick chase wasn't at our best. Well, if you've got your energy levels at tip-top position.
I think you're putting that very nicely. The kick chase was probably the worst I've seen for two seasons. And it's usually a bread and butter, really strong point of our game. It just wasn't
This is where you've got...
It should be.
And if you are flagging, if your condition is not right or you're ill and your energy levels are low, you get what we saw, which is a real disjointed kick chase. Because it's not aligned. If you're not 100%, if you're 100%, the kick chase actually should be pretty easy to do. And you're all on the same wavelength and you move up. If you're not 100%, you can see how it gets disjointed relatively quickly and it gives you problems. We spoke about the defence, how he's falling off tackles. Actually, to be fair, some of it is good footwork by Mercer and others, but actually, they're straightforward tackles. Again, if you're not at 100% condition, whether that's, again, the conditioning or illness or whatever, that feeds into the fact that you're falling off the tackles. And you mentioned about the fact we weren't a jackal threat. Again, it feeds back to the energy levels. Because if you're really dynamic in the first hit, you bring them down a lot quicker. And you've got if your energy level is sharp, first a hit, second a jackal, one the hit, second a jackal. It's an instant, it's almost like a 1-2 punch, 1-2, bang. And if you're not, all it takes, you don't have to be miles, miles off. All it takes is one the hit. And if you're not making a hit cleanly, because you're not 100%, it's not a hit, it's a tackle. And if you're not getting them clean, again, you took yourself out. And then secondly, if you're trying to go in for the jackal, but you're not 100% and you're just even a split second off, well, all it takes is that it's just enough to mean you're not a threat at the jackal anymore. And that's where actually the Newcastle game is the one where we've actually got to look at it, because that's either a temporary thing where it was just an illness and it's annoying, but an illness goes through the camp and we were the recipients of it, or it's something more serious. Because if you have the same problems again on Friday night against Newcastle, then it's a conditioning issue. And then that is a more serious problem because we're stuck now. You know, you can't reverse time. You can't engineer anything other than maybe, I think you get a couple of weeks off after Leinster. So I think there's maybe 2 or 3 weeks off if we lose to Leinster. If our conditioning is off, you then almost have to hope we lose to Leinster and have 3 weeks fully getting back up to speed to rescue the situation. But I think Friday's going to be the answer, to be honest, that tells us either way.
Yeah, the other thing on the breakdown front was, and this is credit to Gloucester, was I thought that they carried into Tommy a lot. which obviously takes him out of being that. He's at his best when he's actually not the tackler.
Second man in.
You're second man in, and he's so good at just timing the guy, you know, waiting for the guy to get on the deck and then getting over the ball. But they targeted him in a tackle a lot, and, you know, he makes his tackles. But that means then he's got to find the time to release, get back up on his feet, then get back over the ball. And by that time, usually it was too late. And, you know, I thought that was quite a smart play. I think the other thing that I want to talk about was, because I thought, as I say, Mercer was exceptional and, you know, particularly sort of playing slightly in the wider channels, which is something we've wondered for Jasper, where he might be more effective because he's got the acceleration and that power in the fend, etc. But also on the kick returns, and when you have a jagged line like we did, I think we got him, you know, pretty well once or twice, but you give him sort of half a dog leg and, you know, he doesn't look like he should be, you know, insanely strong, but he's very, very deceptively strong. He's got great balance through contact and he's got great feet, and we know that. And it's just kind of, there was just a difference in kind of like cleverness in terms of how they used him in the backfield to come back. And, you know, I don't think we've ever used Jasper like that, which is a shame because, you know, I think he could be really prominent in that area.
It is frustrating. I think back to, even though it's not in the backfield, I think back to a try we scored at home to Saris last year and at the start of our run to the top four last season, where we had a real nice dummy move where Visa was a strike runner, but we'd had a, you know, an attack move. What is one of those? Where we have an attack move that allowed Jasper to go through the middle with a couple of dummy lines. We had a bit of deception, allowed Jasper to be the mystery guy as such, power through the middle. We attack up to the 5 meter line. Next phase, recycle it. Bang, Polly goes over. Those are sort of things where I actually think, almost like we used to do with Nemani, we need to be a lot sharper with, where instead of us having him in close quarters, have a think about using Jasper a bit more intelligently, where we used to do with Nemani, where we'd have even Nemani as the decoy runner to get the ball out the back and he'd take a couple of defenders with him, or we'd have a couple of decoy runners in front of Nemani, where Nemani then would end up having a soft shoulder to bust his way through. And this is where
hiding Nemani was always a bit of a challenge, though, even with decoy runners. But I know what you mean. I mean, let's quickly talk about the attack, because I've seen a lot of people say, oh, you know, we have no attack, and, you know, it was awful. And I want to draw a distinction a little bit between, I suppose, some of the way we've played earlier on in the season, I think, this game, because to my eyes, particularly in that first half, we played with a lot more ambition and a lot more width than we have done previously. Now, I'm not going to say it was effective because, again, that comes back a bit to the conditioning. You know, the ruck speed wasn't really lightning, and our structures meant that we kind of tended to run out of ideas maybe after three or four phases. But, you know, there were some good moments. You know, Stewart goes straight through. Yeah, not the best pass to Kelly, and it obviously gets knocked on, but it was a difficult one anyway because Hathaway was chasing back and probably would have got Kelly. So, but those kind of things happen. But then we have situations, you know, like Shilly, I think, threw a couple behind someone, it'd be through one straight into touch. That was a bad one. And those are sort of situations which weren't so great. And it was a difficult one because we all want Tigers to play a little bit more expansively. But I have to admit, I was wondering why we kept going off the top, because we had a couple of rumbles in the first half and we splinted Gloucester, and they looked like they didn't know how to handle it. And to my mind, there's no reason why you can't combine the two. You can't combine a really strong driving game, get them moving backwards, see if you're getting a penalty advantage, see how far you can push them. And then you've got a back line. Yes, they can come up to the back line the more once you've driven through the mark, as opposed to having sort of a 10-meter gap to run up to, like, which is the offside line, off the top of the line out. But they're moving backwards. And so the difference is not really there if they're kind of having to kind of like all of a sudden retreat and get forward. You bring offside into play as well if they're not sharp. And, you know, I think we did stop playing a bit in the second half, but let's not forget, we were the better side in that second half, and we won that second half quite comfortably. And we really should, in my mind, have actually been able to combine that sort of tight game with playing a bit wider, albeit, you know, it wasn't always successful going wide.
Yeah, I think it was nice in the first half where you actually saw, one, a bit of ambition, and second, stuff like offloads. You know, there was a couple of rumbles where we got it out wide to Bassett in space. And that comes from playing the ball wider and having an offload and having a support runner to take the ball off an offload. So there was a nice win from Jasper where we get the ball out to Bassett and we progress up the field. Now, like you said, it doesn't have to be all
lovely, lovely bit of footwork from Bassett actually there as well to do the fullback.
And nice swerve, weren't it?
Yeah,
the old inside outside.
Yeah, very, very nice. Thought as an ex-winger, I thought you'd appreciate that.
To be honest, I do wonder why he didn't sort of pin his ears back and just keep going. He'd almost been better off. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. And actually, the percentage play is to come back inside. But considering he'd got how it was going, he'd been better off just pinning his ears back and just trying. He'd have scampered another 10, 15 yards. He wouldn't have scored, but he'd have got an extra 10, 15 yards off the back of it. And it would have put the defence on the back. But either way, it doesn't really matter. The point is that we had some nice moments. And it is, like you say, it all comes down to what we want. In an ideal world, is the balance. If you look at the best Tigers teams that have ever been, it's always been a balance between the driving game and the backline game. And it's just knowing when to, like you say, when to go tight, when to go wide. And the best Tigers teams always had both options available, but always took the right option when it was down to them. So if they knew they'd got someone in the tight with them all, they'd sucker them in all day long and they'd use hammer that to their advantage, draw the space and then go wide when it's better opportunity, when it's more space, and they'd score. And this is where, like you said, in the first half, it was just a bit of decision making, where, like you said, with a bit of in-game analysis, just say, look, we've got them on in the tight. Let's just keep this going and get ourselves in a better advantage. So I do think, as much as it's an easy thing just to say I've got an audio attack's rubbish, it's not. There was better signs of it on Friday. And you saw a lot of better attacking shape, a lot better attacking intent.
And ambition.
And,
yeah,
ambition.
And we played in much wider channels than we have done before. It was nice seeing Chez get a couple of gallops as well in those wider channels like we like to see him. It's just kind of like you say, it is still clunky and it's not wave after wave of, you know, kind of, you know, it's not quite crisp either, is it?
No, but fundamentally, if you look at it, two of the rolling balls, I know the common theme is, oh, we only scored by rolling balls, but if you look at where the penalties were created, that comes from Kata makes a break up the field, which comes from a good attacking play to get him into that space, which then forces a penalty, which we then kick into the corner. The other one comes from good attacking play out into the back. A real nice kick through, which turns the Gloucester defence. We chase up, force the error, force the penalty. We kick into the corner, we score. So it's very easy to go, oh, we only scored by rolling balls tries. And you go, yeah, but to have got the ball on the 5-metre line means we've won a penalty in a pretty advanced position. Well, how did we get up there? And it actually came from half-decent attack play. I know it's clunky and I know it's not 100%, but it's a lot better on Friday. Fundamentally, the game wasn't lost because of our attack. The game, we actually scored 25 points, four tries. If Shilk, I know they're a tough conversion, but if Shilly had his kicking boots on, we scored 29 points at home, which is normally enough.
Yeah, and it's a tough one because Shilly gets roped in pretty last minute. And he did some really good things. It was a lovely finish for his try. And I know people will sort of like have a go at him about the kicking. They were all tricky ones. You can't help but feel, if Polly was playing in that game, would we have won? I think probably. It's also so disruptive, I think, when you're 10, you know, kind of has to drop out last minute. You know, such an integral part of the team and the real fulcrum of your attacking game. I think this...
Well, that's all that you do all week, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's all week, Pollard would have run the defensive systems and the attacking systems. And at the last minute, Shilcock is thrown in. Now, he would have trained them, but nowhere near as much as what Pollard would have done.
Yeah.
And I look at the second try for Gloucester, the Harris try, where you go, Shilcock's missed a tackle, Rafael threw out the line. Well, actually, if Pollard was in there, maybe Rafael got his timings bang on because it's based on Pollard being there rather than Shilcock. Well, and it could be something as simple as that.
I thought Healy's analysis was great. You know, Shilly was just half a step behind the rest of the line getting up, and also you've got to remember he's much smaller than Polly as well. You know, just that, even that being a bigger lump kind of helps in that situation. Whether Polly makes that tackle or not, I'm pretty sure he slows him down enough for Rafael to he doesn't go through. And this is not me blaming Shilly at all, because you know he's a wonderful player. I really, really like him. He's a class signing for us. It's just like you say, there are just a few things where you think, you know, if Polly had been in that situation, which you're always going to think with a double World Cup winner and one of the best fly halves in the world, to be fair. So, you know, that it's difficult. But let's talk about the defence, because it's actually been something that's been pretty good for us. I think on all the metrics that when you did your statistical measurements against, you know, where we were last season, we're actually, you know, conceding fewer points, fewer tries. So by and large, obviously, we've had difficult sort of moments in games. I think, you know, kind of back to when, you know, we've gone to shit against La Rochelle, for example, like that. But by and large, our phase defence has been, and first phase defence has been pretty good. Although I think Sarri's, our first phase defence was a bit ropey, but that tightened up. And this was a real departure from that. I can imagine Matt Everard absolutely pissing splinters about this one.
I mean, the raw numbers of, I think, somewhere between 35 or 40, depending on which sort of match report you saw, were missed. And you cannot win games of rugby by conceding that many tackles. You just don't. And especially how Tigers play. If you think, irrespective of how a team does play, if you miss 35, 40 tackles in a game, you ain't going to win many games of rugby. But if you're Tigers, where the entire game plan is based around, you know, pressure, make your tackles, and, you know, forcing errors, your defence has got to be almost pinpoint. And historically, it has been. Well, it has been pretty good, which is why we've, you know, even without an attack coach, we're in the mix for top four. As soon as the defence goes, and it's a bit like last week, if you don't play any rugby like we did last week, and you have a 20-minute moment of madness, you have nowhere to go because the tactics were so conservative last week, you've got no hope of scoring anything. This time we're playing some rugby, but if your defence goes, you've got nowhere of going. You know, you have zero way of being able to recuperate, because that's our bread and butter. That's entire game plan is based around you give the opposition nothing. And I know sometimes there's a lot more clever reasons why we lose a game, and you can go into the nth degree on this sort of thing. All the Gloucester tries came from very basic misstep straight tackle. And I know there's tough questions that do need to be asked of McKellar and of the coaches. And of course we should. But we can all stand and shout at McKellar and the coaches and scream and shout and say, it's this, it's that, it's the other. If lads go on the field and do not make a tackle when someone runs at you straight on, that's a player issue. Yeah. And as much as we all want to shout about this and blame the coaches, we said it last week. Players have got to take responsibility for their performance on the field of play. Coach can only do so much. And you can have whatever defensive system you want. You can have whatever coach you want. You can't make your straight up tackles. You've got a problem. And that's on the players. And 40, irrespective of how they were recorded, is way, way, way too many. That's such, I think it's like 65, 70% tackle success. That's just so far off being in a position to win a game of rugby.
I think you really need to be up around 92, 93%, which is probably where we usually sit. It was a real anomaly. And like you say, kind of good defensive players. DK, you know, like his bread and butter is being a really aggressive, solid defender. And I can't blame this on him being a 13, because he gets stepped by a front rower, and that will hurt him a lot. But that's a fact of what happened. And, you know, I must admit, I thought Seb Blake, their hooker, I thought he had an outstanding game, considering, you know, he's their third choice. A heck of a talented player, fair play to him. But he, you know, DK shouldn't be missing that tackle, and he knows that. And then he almost kind of like, I think, again, it's something they pointed out, was that he then looks almost to make up for it and loses his head a little bit, because you've got Stewart who's kind of covering the last man, and DK flies past Mercer rather than concentrating, make sure putting a really good shot on that man, leaving the outside man. That's somebody else's concern. They may still score in the corner, that's fine. But instead, obviously, Mercer goes over and DK sort of flies past him. And, you know, all of a sudden he's got two missed tackles in his, you know, in his record book, and they've scored a try. And it's the same with Shinny, one missed tackle, try. And that's Chris Harris, a good player, you know, but he's not renowned for being a tackle busting, you know, it's not Mar Nonu herring at you straight away. This is a guy who I expect Shinny, he's not the biggest defender, but he's a guy, he's a solid defender. I'd expect to bring him down. And like you say, there's only so much you can do. The last try they score, I've got a little bit more sympathy for, because I think it's Chez that misses, isn't it? But
There's Cracknell. I think Cracknell misses a half chance to tackle before it comes through. Chesham's then a tired body that probably shouldn't have been in that position.
Yeah, that's it.
Make that tackle.
The thing was, basically, they're going left to right, and we've got all of a sudden a gap that's appeared because we're too tired. Like I said, with Ches, no blame on him at all for me, because he's ran himself into the ground and played 80 minutes after the Six Nations, and we've got to rest him next week because he's such an important player for us. But he's always struggling to come across and make that tackle. And I said to you before we hit record, the strangest thing about this game was that even when we were down, I was always confident that we were going to get back into the game and even get back into the lead, even when we you know, I think, 14 points odd down at that point. But once we got into the lead, I had very little confidence that we were going to be able to hold on to it. I thought we'd do something a bit stupid under the pressure, and we conceded a penalty. They rumbled up close. Great work by Joe Hayes to hold up, you know, the pick and go from Ford Robinson. Superb. And JVP in there again. We'll come on to JVP in a minute. So good to see him back. And then, but even then, like that defensive set, Matt Everard would be looking at it and say, that's just not good enough. You know, we've got to have awareness of where those gaps are, and you either drop your press or we have to make sure those gaps are there. I mean, it's a superb finish by Varney, lovely offload by Blake. And it was great play to Glosser, not taking anything away from that. But, you know, from a defensive point of view, it was a bit of a nightmare. But again, you just wonder how much of that comes down to conditioning. So,
it's an interesting point, isn't it?
Because we don't know. Shall we try and finish on some positives?
Please do.
Okay, because I think that's nicer. We've got that out of the way. Let's talk about, I think, you know, the one really big one is the return of JVP. And oh my offload. What a gorgeous return to Tigers colours for him. I thought he looked really good, really sharp. A little bit of rust, I think, with a couple of his kicks, weren't there? You know, I think one went up, you know, up, straight up in the sky and didn't really go anywhere. Another one went a bit far, and I think one went into touch, but he did a lot of kicking because that's how we were looking to play, quite cautiously, and the majority of them were very, very good. And considering he hasn't played for 8 months, thought it was good, but it was mainly his speed to the ball. His service was really sharp, a couple of nice half breaks, and then just that offload, that skill, that awareness, the confidence was just absolutely brilliant to see. Delighted that he's back and at such an important time as well.
It's very noticeable the impact that he had, and it is very, very good to have him back and have him back with a point to prove as well. That's a guy that looks very, very motivated to put everyone back on notice that he is back and back in the mix.
Good defensive moments from him as well. Some like a really good defense where he's shooting up and hitting someone, and you know he's been really aggressive with his tackles because you know he's a bit of a beanpole, but he's not tidy. He threw himself around. It was great to see. There was no wariness about, oh, you know, what about my ankle or anything or my calf, but he properly went for it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, shine for actually, it's more match fitness is lacking rather than overall fitness. He looked pretty, pretty good to go, really. What I liked, and Austin picked up on it on comms, and it's quite notable on a rewatch, actually, compared to someone like Whiteley, and this is a dig on Whiteley because he's a very good player, but when you've got JVP, who is a really good player, he attacks the fringes. So you've always got that option where he's always looking. If a forward's a bit slow, or there's a half step, or just a bit of a gap, or the defender's already gone, JVP wants to make that break. It's very, very noticeable how JVP is almost the first instance. He's always have a look. Always, you always see it with Mitchell. Mitchell does this a lot as well. Both JVP and Mitchell, it's almost their first instinct. And Lenny used to do this. Pete Lenny was at this as well. First instinct is not to get the ball away, but just to see. It's always just to see what the guard's situation on the ruck is. And if there's any weakness, they're going to take it. I actually slightly disagree with him on some point. I thought ruck speed in the first half actually was pretty good. I thought Lenny was pretty good at getting the ball away. It wasn't at where peak standards, but I thought it was okay. I thought it was a really good sort of stuff. I think if you can get really good ruck ball going, I think the attack game we want to play, whilst again the issues of attack and it's clunky and all the rest of it, just by having someone like JVP and giving JVP quick ruck ball, I think gets your attack moving in a real good positive direction, because he's always one going to test the fringes. So there's an opportunity for some breaks. If you've combined that with Cattle on a shoulder, Certainly, if you get the initial bust through from JVP with Catter on the shoulder, that's exciting. But if you've also got someone who can whip the ball away very, very quickly and get the back line moving, then I think actually you can sometimes get away with not having an attack coach by just almost forcing, you almost force an attack just by speed. And I think with Jack, we might be able to sort of get by just by on his speed and catching teams away. If you get
good
ball carries in the first instance, bust a line, get ruck speed and get Jack going, we might be able to cobble together some decent attack play just off the back of that.
Well, I mean, any attack's going to look a lot better with like lightning service and, you know, a nine that is a threat to the fringes. You only need to have one dart early on and then they're on notice the rest of the game. They can't drift. They can't go and step up out the line quickly close to the ruck because they'll know that your front five will get stepped and, you know, JVP will dart between. So, you know, having him back now is super important. What else was positive? Thought Joe Hayes was excellent when he came on. As he often is, that defensive intervention was very, very good. Thought Freddie Stewart at fullback, I think he had one drop and obviously that one pass, but actually I really liked his running from deep. He beat a lot of defenders. I think he was probably our best attacker. Some big meters made as well, and they weren't easy meters either. He wasn't just kind of like running 30 meters back into open space. He's got this really nice thing now where he almost runs a bit laterally, then he sort of swerves back in, and he's got that power to break through the first tackle. He looked like a bloke with a point to prove about his attacking game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, he's got a clear target between now and the end of the season of what he wants to be doing. I think it's no secret where the difference is between him and Furbank and what he's probably going to be working on between now and the end of the season. It's pretty clear what Furbank's going to be working on his side. It's going to be catching high balls. So, you know, you can see what he's trying to do, and that's exciting. What I also liked was, you know, the fact that at 17-3 down, you can shit yourselves. And I know this is almost, you take it for given, but we got ourselves back in the game. You know, and we actually, if you forget about that last try by Varney, and I know you can't because it's still
I wish I could.
Relevant. Yeah. It happened. It's on the scoreboard and I saw it twice. Live and on the TV, you can't ignore it. But if you take that away, you have, bar 3 points off the penalty, we had scored 22 points to get ourselves back into a winning position. Now, I know we shit it up and we lost the game, and it doesn't excuse it, but it's a real good mentality of we went 17-3 down, didn't panic, we got ourselves back in the game, got ourselves a try before half time. Got ourselves back into the sheds, regrouped, came back out. And I'd say with 8 minutes to go, you're 25-20 up. Yes, we lost the game, and that is poor. And once you get yourself in that position, you do have to get yourself through, especially at home. But we got ourselves back. And I think if I was to cling on to a positive, it is the fact we worked ourselves back into a winning position.
Oh, 100%. And I didn't mind the fact either that we decided to go back to quite a constrained game at all, because I think it showed... Right, a bit of nous, I think, by McKellar or the players, whoever it may be, to say, we've got them in the tight here. Let's go and maul them off the park. Yes, we can still play wider, and we saw that with Shilly's try. We saw that with a couple of breaks. But in the meantime, let's just make sure that we do our nuts and bolts. And they were better in the second half. We were the better side and in that second half. And they say it's the bit at the end is really unfortunate, but actually it's a 10 minutes of dross that there was in the first half. That cost us that game, not the not really the end, although obviously technically it did cost us the game. I did have on my notes that we were actually a bit lucky to score, you know, in the first half, because it came from a half-charge down kick, which Catter takes and then gets forward. But actually, to be honest, we were owed a bit of luck because Matt Carley had a fucking howler in the first minute where I think Gloucester clearly not on. Tommy Raffel must be about a metre away from it. I don't know what the linesman's doing. I mean, touch judge. He's right next to him. And even then the TMO actually comes in and says that was a knock on, and therefore because Gloucester caught it and he had a chance to get out of the way, it's offside. You're 40 metres out with a good kick to touchline, and then we build pressure from there. And God, yeah, it could have been a completely different story. So we were owed a bit of luck for that shambolic decision by Carley. And then the again, we've talked about this, the complete inconsistency. So we've seen Luke Pearce listened, we've seen other refs. I don't think Luke Pearce did what Matt Carley did and said, no, I'm not going to listen to the TMO telling me I've made a clear mistake. Well, we've seen other refs, I think England had it against Italy where the TMO came in and said, oh, actually, it should be Italy's line out, or there was actually a knock on by England there. You know, which one is it? You know, you either have a TMO there to correct mistakes, or they're just there for foul play and tries. Not anything in between. Sorry, it's a bit of a rant, but I just thoroughly fucked off by that. And I was pleased that we basically shithoused our way into a position to score that try, because I think we were owed a bit of luck after that diabolical bit of refereeing. But there we go. I suppose the other good thing is we did score four tries. We've been asking us to score try bonus points. Ideally in a win, lads. We didn't specify. It's probably our fault. And of course, then we get losing bonus points. So, you know, in terms of us saying what our minimum was, getting 4 points from it, we got two. It's not ideal at all. The top four race has not been run yet. We're still within touching distance of them. It would have been a heck of a lot easier if we had another 3 points on top. But, you know, top two probably gone. But there's still a very simple equation. We've got to win our games. I think that we always said five will get us in the top four. So we've still got five games left. Four may get us in the top four as long as we pick up some bonus points. So there's a lot of games left to be played this season, and teams, you know, above us have to play each other, which always mixes things up. And you've got other sides coming back into form as well, like Bristol. I think Bristol are probably going to have a big part in the shake-up at the end as well.
It is. You bang on. As you said, the assignment before Friday night was win four, probably five games, and you're probably there. The assignment is still the same. The only difference is you've chewed up an extra game. So it's still, you know, it's still in our hands, theoretically. The reality is that we are almost in, actually we are, there's no almost about it, we are in uncharted waters. We've never had a shutdown before like this. So nobody knows how it's going to pan out. Nobody knows what everyone else has been up to. We're going to find out by the end of the season of whatever methodology has worked or not worked. You know, we said it before, the shutdown came at the worst possible time for Northampton because they were building up a real head of steam.
Yeah.
And at the point of when they were absolutely going great guns, a hard handbrake has had to be shoved onto them and they've got to start again. We are all starting afresh here. And this is where we're in uncharted waters. Nobody knows how it's all going to play out. The other thing just to think about is the last time this happened in terms of coming back from, in this case, it was the World Cup and when we lost to Quins at home. We then won the next five on the trot. And that's what we need to do now.
Yeah, maybe we just need one game to kind of like get most of our team back in and go, all right, let's settle down a bit and get back into it. And then pick it up. I like that. Shall we do some three-word reviews?
Let's do it.
Elliot, you've been trawling Twitter. What have you got for me? You've also been trawling through a lot of Mikella out sort of ones as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's clearly written in the heat of the moment on Friday evening. I wonder if a day later, everyone, or 2 days later, 3 days later, everyone stands by it, but who knows. First one was from Macca, Paul McBride, who put, must defend better. Yeah, I know it's deadly simple, but I'll keep hammering it. You just can't miss that amount of tackles and expect games of rugby, win games of rugby at this level. You know, your defence has got to be so, so good to win it. So yeah, simply, it's a pretty easy thing. I suspect the review session of the game was a little bit uncomfortable for a few people because a few people, yeah, some of the bad missed tackles were just unforgivable at times. Even if they didn't lead to a try, they were quite simply just bad, bad misses. And on a second watch, it's quite stark, really.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely agree. I'm just going, before I do my three-word reviews from Facebook, I realised that Mark Appleby messaged in, and I didn't give him a shout out earlier because for some reason it was in our junk folder, along with all the Nigerian princes offering us fortunes, which we've apparently inherited. Mark says, hi guys, been listening to the podcast for a few months now, thought I'd email in, listen to the game Friday night on the radio, and after the shower of shit last week and again this week, what have the coaching setup done? How was there no support for Kata when he made a break? Attack coach. Well, I think that we agree that was an issue, but probably more conditioning. What that was down to, as we say, we don't know. Gloucester played their same game as last week, and why didn't we do a sort of full review. And I suppose that is, I think that's quite a good point, because I think Gloucester actually, we talked about us not playing a rugby. Gloucester played less than us a lot of the time. They played, you know, we'd at least do a couple of phases before we kicked. They would just catch, set up a phase, kick. They did nothing. They sort of said, right, you come and have a go at us. And yeah, it's the second game in a row. We didn't really dominate the kicking battle like we probably thought we would do. But effectively, yes, I think the point is, Mark makes, is that we can't play like we have done over the last 2 weeks again, or season's gone. I think it was one written in the heat of the moment. I also had an email from Sam Hill, who then asked me not to read it out because he said he was just fuming on Friday night. He said he retracts it all. So, you know, it's one of these things, I think, with a bit of nuance looking back on it, you could perhaps, it's not just the coaches, but I think he makes a good point about, you know, Gloucester didn't really do anything different to what they did the previous Friday.
Yeah, I get that. Last one for me, and it's actually, I'm going to have two because it's quite linked in. There's a reason why. So last week, Openside Morpheus put shoot, bang. Andy Stevens has linked into it just to put foot, gun, bang. And Openside Morpheus is back again, has put other foot, bang. Yeah, it's nice little like plays on the old shooting yourself in the foot. Again, that last week it was a mad 20 minutes. Friday it was a mad 10 of just two missed tackles, two tries, 17-3 down. You're up against it to get away back in. So yeah, we need to find a way of not shooting ourselves in the foot, because ultimately you're going to win a few more games if you don't do that.
Kev Thompson on Facebook says, Zach Mercer masterclass. We discussed it before. Annoyingly, because I don't like it when the players that they overhype up play well. He did play very, very well, and we couldn't handle him. And that there was, you know, a league of difference between him and Visa and their effectiveness. And that probably came down to A, Mercer playing very, very well, but B, I thought how they were both respectively used. I also quite like this one. From Darren Bouch, who says, Leinster shitting themselves, which gives us a bit of a sobering reminder of what we've got coming up on the horizon. So there we go.
We're lulling them into a massive sense of overconfidence. It's all part of the long game.
All part of the plan. Right, off we go to Newcastle on Friday night. And I suppose if you want a bit of positivity, they've got a 6-day turnaround. We've got 7 days, and we need the extra day, I think. So it's always been a challenging place for us. I think Newcastle at home, always a tricky assignment. I know that they've been well off the pace this year, but they've got Steve Diamond, you know, in charge. He's not going to suffer any fools, although his language sort of earlier on in the week suggested he wanted to get these games out the way, and basically half the players are going to be told they're going to get shipped on next week. So I don't know what that does for the players' focus or confidence there, but I think we've got to assume it's going to be another battle. And we've come unstuck there before, haven't we?
It is a stereotypical tough away game, isn't it? It's a big grim game up north. Look, Falcons now are a different animal to what they were 3 months ago. They were a different animal to what they were 2 months ago, quite frankly. And it's down to Steve Diamond in terms of, you saw it when he was going into Worcester, he got in and very quickly he set some standards and he made people, you either stick to those standards or you're off. And quite clearly, quite a few players can't stick to those standards, hence why they're all being shipped off in a few weeks' time. But the what you get off the back of it is what you get is a real tough, gnarly team that fights for 80 minutes and will go the distance, and they'll go toe-to-toe with you. It'll be streetwise, it'll be sharp, and it'll be nuggety. And it is all those things which we've sort of spoken about of Newcastle teams in the past. It'll just be under a Steve Diamond helm, and I think it's almost a good marriage for them. The reality is that they beat Sale in the shutdown. Now, it is a friendly, but you've still got to respect the result. They went down to Exeter at the weekend, and Exeter had to scrap and they had to fight, and it wasn't made easy for them. And they came away with a good win, but they knew they'd been in the game off the back of it. And look, it's Friday night. It's under the lights on a plastic pitch with a Steve Diamond team in there. You've got to respect everything about them.
They'll be licking their lips as well. They'll think that they can smell blood, and they probably can smell blood. And they'll think this is an opportunity to get a win. We certainly don't want to be the first team to go down to them, because that's not going to be a particular... Well, firstly, it would be catastrophic for our season. And secondly, you simply don't want that title as being the only team to lose to Newcastle in the league this year. So it's going to be the big challenge. I like Newcastle. I love the club. I really hope that they stuff it up on Friday night and have a stinker and we get a win. I don't want to kind of go over this Steve Diamond thing like he's some sort of mythical beast, you know, like, because look, he's a good coach, but he's been at a lot of places and he's won not a lot. So let's not pretend that he's, you know, kind of some coaching genius. But he does have a way, like you say, of kind of what his ceiling is. It might not be as high as other coaches, but his baseline, I think, is a lot higher than others. And that's the big difference. You know, Newcastle won't be as wet as I think they've been at times this season. They'll be physical, they'll be nasty. And I remember when we lost there a couple of seasons ago, it was because we got drawn into this scrap. They were getting under our skin. We couldn't really sort of handle it. And, or actually, was that the game where we won, but it was a pretty ugly win in the title winning season? And I think, we were kind of hoping that we'd sort of like be finishing the season with a bit of a bang, but instead we got dragged into an arm wrestle, lots of scraps off the ball and stuff like that. You know, that's the sort of thing that we can probably expect. What I'm really interested to see, obviously, is our lineup, because we have to go all guns blazing. But then we've got this situation at the moment where clearly some of the England boys need a rest. Now, Freddie Stewart, I don't think, does, because he didn't play a lot of the matches. I think Chez certainly does. So I'm bringing Gorgeous George in for this one. Bit of extra gnarliness as well. Although I would obviously love Chez to play, because I think he's fantastic. And obviously, hopefully you have Polly back as well. The other change I'd make actually would be at Loosehead. Don't think Cronin had his best game. It's probably fair to say against Gloucester. Be tempted to start Jimmy Whitcomb, who I thought was decent again. Although he was another one who missed a tackle on Mercer, but everyone did.
Yeah, I think you always have to sort of do the England stuff and the internationals first. Chesham, I think, is the obvious one. I think he needs a week off. Coley, I think this is scheduled as his week off. So I don't think Coley will be playing. And in the last one...
Do you think he'll be on the bench?
No, I think Hurd is... I think it's a full week off for Coley. I think it'll be Hurd on the bench with Hazy starting. And the question mark is about Tommy. What do we do there? There is a question. There is a... Considering how many minutes he played, I know he's not under an obligation to be rested. However, with Leinster coming up, there is an argument that maybe Tommy has to take a week off just for his own... Just to get him back sharp, just to get him at his peak. I don't see him week in, week out, so I don't particularly know. The other question is about on form. Because I like DK, and I think he's a really good player. But his confidence looks low. And it's almost... it would almost help him to take him out the firing line for a little bit. Just for a couple of weeks, get him through to after the Leinster game, we can reassess. It would almost do him a kindness to rest him. And it's just a question then of what do you do off the back of it. Phil Fockenseager's had a good few weeks.
Scotty, you have a mix of Guy Porter's back. We think he's back, ready to go, according to McKellar. And he's got a good record against Newcastle as well. Always seems to show up against them.
So, yeah, those are, I guess, the question mark is how many changes do you want to balance? Because you don't want to make too many and disrupt it. But at the same point, you do want lads either on form or fit and fresh, and to get them get the best out of them. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes down. But should we put a team together?
Yeah, let's go for it. So my front row, I've got Jimmy, I've got the Emperor, and I've got Hazy.
Yeah, I suspect Cronin would start, but I would have Whitcomb starting. So I'd go with yours.
Go for George Martin and Harry Wells. And I think Wellesley needs a big game. I love Wellesley. He's Tigers through and through. But I think he needs a big game. And the other option, of course, if you want to go ultra aggressive, is to put Hatherall in the second row with Gorgeous George and really add some firepower to the carrying game.
I'd go with Wellesley just purely because I like the dual option of Hatherall covering two positions on the bench. So I'd go Martin and Wellesley.
Then Hanro, Jasper, and it's interesting, like you say, with Tommy. I suspect it will start him because I think we've got, if his, you know, kind of if his numbers are looking good, you know, on all their sort of their monitoring and everything like that, I think we'll start him because, like we say, the likelihood is we've got Leinster away. The likelihood is we'll have a week off after that. So you've got that on the horizon. So I wouldn't be surprised to see us start him.
I have got Cracknell to start at 7. I've got Hanra at 6, Crackers at 7 with Visa at 8. I think he'll quite like the option of resting Tommy and having Crackers in there as one as a decent ball carrier to sort of have that sort of extra gnarly carrier. And also, to be fair to Crackers, he is more than Rogerson at 7. He is a more of a jackal threat. So yeah, he isn't an out-and-out jackaler, but there's a more pronounced jackal threat than Rogerson offers at 7.
And you've got to remember as well, with guys like Julian, with guys like Hanro and Jasper and Catty, we've got jackal threats in that side. Plenty of jackal threats in that side. It's just about using them. Yeah, I think you've swayed me on that. I think I'd go for Crackers as well. I think that, yeah, we've got to remember that Tommy, yeah, I love him, but he was ineffective in what he's usually very effective at against Gloucester. So I think that's something, yeah, that might weigh on the coach's mind and show that Tommy needs a bit of a break. Now, 9 is interesting because you've got JVP. He's coming back. Is it too early to start him? Do you just give him another half an hour again? I'd be tempted to do what we did against Gloucester.
I'm also tempted to start him. I find it really tough. Cool. I think Lenny will start with JVP off the bench. But at the same point, if you want to go in the same way against Gloucester, we came out of the traps and we're trying to play some rugby pretty quickly. Given how Jack came through on Friday, if you do want to come out the traps and if you want to play quickly from the start, I can see them going, look, let's go quick. We want to play quick. We want to have that test match intensity. Then let's try and get over the line. Let's have Cracknell. Let's have runners hitting
wave,
on.
Wave laughing. After wave of big runners. That's it. Yeah, I think, yeah.
Wave after wave with JVP to stop.
Let's go JVP.
I'll go Jack. Hopefully Polly's back. So I'd go Jack and Polly at 9 and 10. Centres is where I am really stuck.
Well, obviously Catter did look like he picked up a knock, but I think it was crap because he was able to run it off and carry on running and then he probably got bought off. So I'd probably start Catter and probably Scotty, I think, at 13.
I think as a temporary fix for the defensive issues, I think I would have Catter and Scotty just in terms of, I think Catter has to play at the moment just because of how we're set up. He offers that such a strong go forward in the centres down the middle. I think Catter's got to play anyway. I would quite like to see him at 13, but for now he's clearly in 12 shirt, so I'd have him at 12. I'd go Scotty and just have Scotty as a defensive organiser and hope that sort of nous in the midfield just to organise the back line to sort of solve some of the problems from last week.
Yeah, back three stays the same for me.
No change for me.
Yeah. Bench?
If Whitcomb's starting, I'd go Cronin. Be interested about where Claire or Dolly are at hooker. Otherwise, it'll be Finn. Herdy at tight head.
Yeah.
Haverill, Rogerson, forwards.
Is Herdy fit?
I know he's back in the sort of training video. It's training photos on social media. So I'm going to put a fiver, my virtual fiver on him if he's back in training, that he must be fairly close.
Yeah.
So I'll go Herdy. Haverill and Rogerson as the forwards. If JVP's playing, I'd have Lenny on the bench with Shilcock. I'd probably go Phil Fockenseager again as my outside back.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose Shilly covers fullback, doesn't he? And then if you need someone to go out to the wing, Catter can play wing. He's done that for Tonga. That might be quite fun. So we'll see, but I agree. I think we need a fast start. I'll be interested to see, despite saying we want a fast start, I also wouldn't be surprised if we do try Maldon because, as I said earlier, Steve Diamond's done these comments about the illegality of our rolling maul and says that it should be outlawed from 5 metres out, which is just stupid. And so it's as stupid as someone saying, I want to get rid of scrums. But people say that when they're not good at something. And it means that he's nervous about it. Although I will say he does raise a good point about our blockers because I've watched it a few times And I've thought we're playing it quite close there. I don't think you need to either. I think, you know, you can be quite smart, make sure you're lateral, and then try and cover up as soon as the guy lands. But I think we need to be quite careful, because obviously it's going to be something that Diamond's gone and talked to, tried to bring to the ref's attention. So just got to be a bit careful with that. But I would be looking to give them a good mauling in this game as well. But as I've said before, there's no reason why you can't do both. There's no reason why you can't look to beat them up in a maul and then play quickly off that when you've got a retreating defensive line.
Agreed. Yep, fully agreed from my side.
Right. Well, both our predictions of a good win for Tigers and a bounce back were way off last time. Dare we predict this one?
At this moment, in theory, we should be demanding a 5-pointer, in theory. I almost think we should be just... I'll be glad to take a win, just because of the potential banana skin of it. It's almost like Ealing, where you just sort of win, get through someone else, so Newcastle, someone else's problem. Mm. Realistically, this was probably put down as a 5-pointer to get into the top four. If you have got aspirations of the top four, we do need a 5-pointer. Whether we get that or not, don't know. I think Tigers will win, but I think it will be a bit of a scrap. I think we'll get a bonus point, to be fair, but I think it will be a scrap. I don't think it'd be a wide winning margin. I think it would just be a little bit similar to last week, where we win and just get what we need. Get it out. Go home.
Eight. It's a shame, because Newcastle's a nice night out. I'll say Tigers by 8, but I foresee it not being a particularly easy watch at times. You've got to think as well, you know, if we said that, you know, kind of like two wins with or without bonus points was a minimum for the two. If we pick up a 5-point win here, then that's 7 points from those first two games, and it almost starts to eke up to what we were needing. Yes, we're still a point off. And, you know, the bottom line is that Gloucester game was still burned, but a 5-point win would be absolutely massive at this stage of the season. So fingers crossed, go on the boys. Well, that's the end of this podcast. Just one thing before we go. Obviously, the loss to Gloucester was grating, but of course, it was, on the other hand, great to see Ed Slater and his family there. And of course, got to remember that the Slater Cup is all for a cause that's far, far bigger than rugby. MND, such a destructive disease, and the 4Red Foundation doing wonderful work for Ed's family and the MND community itself. And obviously, there were lots of people who were getting stuck in and helping that, weren't there, Elliot?
Yeah, there was a good group that cycled up from Gloucester, from Kingsholme, up to Welford Road on Friday night, including Adam Whitty, who apparently did zero preparation, so was completely fucked by Warwickshire.
I don't know what the polite way is to ask Adam, how's your gooch?
I would just I suspect listening to the commentary on Friday night was an experience. I suspect Adam was stood up throughout all of it. But yeah, it's a great group who did a great thing for a great cause. Mike Gibson is one of the guys from Tigers who were front and centre of it. And I'm sure they will take a donation even post the event. So there's been plenty of sort of links to it on social media, both on Facebook and Twitter. So if you do see it and you are in a position where you can lob a couple of quid in, I'm sure it will be gratefully appreciated by everyone involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Do make sure you can. It's wonderful. Well, if you can, please make sure you do, because it's a wonderful foundation and obviously can use all the support it can get. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch up with you next week.